I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Welcome to the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow, and today I have two guests to help answer your questions on the hotline. One has already been on the program, Steve Millett, a plant and pest doctor, a pest technician for a St. Louis family-owned company. The other one is new, Nathan Brandt, a horticulture specialist for University of Missouri Extension for 10 years. He currently works in financial services and enjoys volunteer gardening on the side. Guys, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good morning. Good to see you again, Scott.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, our number is 314-436-7900. You can also dial 1-800-925-1120. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. I'd like to start, Nathan, hear a little about your background since this is your first time on the program.
Cool. Yeah, I came to Missouri about 15 years ago. I was working for the University of Missouri Extension. Extension is a branch of the university in every county that is responsible for teaching people and basically sharing the information from the university. So I ran a few programs here in Missouri in St. Louis, like the Master Gardener Program, if you've ever heard of that, runs at the Botanical Garden together with Extension. So a lot of volunteer training programs and then just neat programs in the community to help people improve their communities through horticulture and gardening.
What was your initial interest in those subjects?
Jeez, that goes way back to when I was a kid and just like gardening in my own backyard, growing pumpkins and strawberries and things like that.
Pumpkins and strawberries, yeah. Yep. I have a question for you guys. You might be able to tell my voice is a little raspy.
I noticed that.
I believe that it is allergies. Uh-huh. So what's the pollen situation this spring, you think?
Well, Nate and I were talking about this earlier. It was awful this week. I work outdoors all day long, and I went home at night, I think on Monday, and my black boots were yellow, dusty. Everything, my clothes was dusty from pollen. And I would, have to shower when I got home. It was so bad. My nose was running. And a couple of guys at work, they just went home sick. And it was really, we played the David Bowie Changes song. It changed a lot this week. It went up, on Wednesday, I think. And it's mainly right now oak and the mulberry. The mulberry tree doesn't really cause what they call it a allergen reaction. But oak is the one, though. That's the one that's blowing the yellow pollen everywhere. And it was windy, too. So that really, really got it all exchanged everywhere in the air. And I saw it over cars and handrails and everything. It was just really bad. And then it changed when we got the rain.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask a follow-up is, yeah. Is the rain that brings it down?
It brought it down. But you know what? What happens, though, you bring the rain? Your mold goes through the roof. Mm. So that's what happened. So the oak went through the roof. I think it was it was off the charts if you look at the graphs. And the mold then went really up. And probably you're getting a double whammy there. So, but hopefully, you get through the spring, the allergens will lower. And then you won't have a whole lot of allergen problems until the fall. Nate, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I was told when I moved to St. Louis that this is kind of the allergy capital of the world. I'd never had allergies before, but have definitely developed some since. And like you, this last week, it was kind of a rough go.
Yeah, just came out of nowhere for me. The signal that I had was I would wake up and my throat was really dry,
right?
At night, and I don't usually have that. And all of a sudden I thought, oh boy, here come the allergies.
Yeah. Take two showers, one in the morning.
Yeah.
And then when you get home, that's what I did. End of the day, just shower, just put all your clothes I put it in a little, security box with a lid on it and everything until I do laundry on the Saturday. So yeah, it's that bad.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the update. Appreciate it. I was feeling a little paranoid. Like, wait, do I have a cold? I'm pretty sure it's the allergies.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's start with Betty. Good morning, Betty. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Thank you. Last week, I believe I heard about reseeding your yard, and it was, I think I heard seed weed.
Did you say seed weed?
Yeah.
So what do you mean by seed weed?
I have no idea. That's what it sounded like to me. And what it is to reseed your lawn, and it was used in one of the parks in St. Louis, and it's supposed to be wonderful, and it doesn't grow real fast.
So you can seed your lawn this time of year. The difficulty that people usually have is the ground is cold, and so it takes a little bit longer for the seed to come up, and then we get hit with, you know, maybe like really hot temperatures in June. And so that seed, which is just brand new and coming up, is at the same time hit with a bunch of really high temperatures. And so a better time to seed your lawn would probably be in the fall.
What I'm interested in is reseeding. I already have a good stand of grass, but I want to reseed some bare spots.
I would definitely recommend doing that, but it might be better to focus on that in the fall. If you have a patch of grass that's just not doing very good, you could consider picking up just a little bit of sod to put down this time of year, because grass that's seeded in the spring has a tough time making it through the summer.
I realize that, but I was interested because of what I heard last week.
Steve, you were here last week, so is there a product that you were referring to?
Are you looking about a specific name? I think it was the Scottish Lynx. Yeah.
That's what I was
Chuck was, promoting that.
Scottish Mix?
No, Lynx. Scottish Lynx.
Like the golf term?
Oh.
Yeah.
Scottish Lynx.
A lot of the United Garden Centers have that.
Oh, thank you very, very much.
What's your favorite garden center? Where are you calling from?
Well, it's probably WeHop.
WeHop? Which one? The one on Barrett Station Road?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's great. It's always busy.
Yes.
Always busy, busy, busy. Right next to Sherwood's Forest and then Kirkwood Gardens. And then you go down the street by Doherty Ferry and you've got, what is that, Greenwood Nurseries down there?
Greenscape, S-C-A-P-E.
Very good.
She's excellent. You, Steve.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Betty.
Have a good day. Yeah, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 314-436-7900. Nathan, tell me about it says volunteer gardening. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, there's a whole group of people out there that really enjoy helping out in local neighborhood parks and civic areas. Master gardeners are what they're called. If you've never met one, they're really smart people who have taken time to take some classes on gardening, and then they go out and they volunteer. So they might volunteer at places like the Botanical Garden or parks and other green spaces around town. If people are super interested in plants and they thought about trying to get more of a background in it but don't want to like go get a degree or something. Extension and the Botanical Garden together run the Master Gardener program each year. It starts up in the spring in January, but you want to get signed up for it in the fall in October. So look up University of Missouri Extension in St. Louis, and you'll be able to see some information right on our website about becoming a Master Gardener.
Now, is a Master Gardener like a Master Sommelier where they have to take a test?
Actually, in St. Louis, our program is pretty rigorous, and so we do have weekly tests that people take to just make sure that they're getting the information okay. It's important if you're going to volunteer that you're sharing the right information with people. So, yeah, it's but don't let that intimidate you. Like, everybody passes. We're okay.
Well, that's because they have really good teachers like Nate.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
And I think when you were doing it, if you did for 10 years, it's really amazing. And he had about 500 students that he had to corral and educate, and they all did exceptionally well.
Well, thanks, Steve.
Well, I just have in my mind a sommelier test where you have to taste 50 wines and name all of them, and I'm thinking of gardening.
Well,
you got to walk by these plants and pick them out.
that's not too far off from
okay.
that.
All right.
Yeah, we would give people a set of new plants each week, whether it might be herbs or flowers or trees or something like that to memorize and to learn a little bit about so that they get a good background.
And don't they have to do some sort of service along with that?
That's right.
Hours?
So after they take the training, then they commit to giving 50 hours worth of service to their community each year.
That's a good program.
Yeah.
A good program.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I'm glad to learn about that. I did not know. That is Nathan Brandt. He was a horticulture specialist with the Mizzou Extension for 10 years, and now he teaches master gardeners. We also have Steve Millett, who's been on the program before, taking your calls at 314-436-7900. We'll get back to those after a short break.
By inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of...
We are back on the Garden Hotline. Want to tell you that Mike Miller sends his best to you, and we send our best to him as he continues his recovery. I'm Scott Jagow. We have two guests today, plant experts, Steve Millett and Nathan Brandt, who has not been on the show before. He is currently working as a volunteer gardener and teaching people to garden, which is a good thing. In the city of St. Louis. Our phone number is 314-436-7900, and we continue the phone calls with Mike. Mike, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, I have a Nelly Moser clematis that's in full bloom, beautiful. I was just wondering if I could transplant a part of that into another garden so I can have at least two of them instead of just the one main one. Is it the time of year, or can that be done?
I have seen a lot of clematis. Can you tell if down at the base of the plant, if it's got multiple stems kind of coming up from the ground?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Okay. I think a better time to work on transplanting that would be during the dormant season.
If you go to
work on... dividing a perennial like that during the time that it's actively growing, it could kind of slow it down or maybe even give it a little bit of transplant shock. So I guess maybe wait until it's done flowering or even into the fall and think about
it. It's so beautiful that it's got like the stargazer lily type flowers on it. It's beautiful. And I just thought, well, I've got a place in a new garden that I built, and I got a trellis for it. I thought, well, maybe I should try to transplant it to get it started in the summertime while it's, ground is warm.
Best time to do a lot of things for transplanting anyways is either really early in the spring or maybe into the fall after things start to go dormant.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it, Mike. 314-436-7900. Nathan, you mentioned parks. I'm curious what specific parks you've worked on and what people do, some of the master gardeners do in those parks.
Yeah. So if you go to Tower Grove, you'll see some beautiful horticulture plantings. St. Louis is, we could have a whole separate conversation about all the cool parks in St.
Yes.
Louis. I mean, you've got some really awesome ones. And there are people who... we'll just adopt a park near their house and just start taking care of maybe just a few beds so that there's some annuals or roses or something growing to make the place look pretty. It's honestly a really amazing thing for those parks because otherwise they'd have to pay staff to come in there and weekly prune and deadhead and mulch and weed and things like that. You've got an army of, probably over 1,000 volunteers in St. Louis right now who are out, doing things like planting bulbs or getting beds ready for spring planting and things like that. So almost most of the parks around have volunteers that are helping to take care of them.
What about, do a lot of them go to the Missouri Botanical Garden too?
Yeah, definitely. The Missouri Botanical Garden is a fun place for people to volunteer because they get to work with really knowledgeable staff and then obviously take care of plants in one of the most renowned garden centers or botanical gardens in the world. So, really neat opportunity for those volunteers for sure.
Yeah, between the park system, you can go down from Forest Park to Tower Grove Park to Carondelet Park, on and on. St. Louis, I've lived a lot of different places, and St. Louis's park system is, there isn't one better.
Mm-mm.
There is not one better in the country.
Yeah, where I'm from, back, you know, out west, we've got a park here and there, but in St. Louis, they literally dot the landscape. It's incredible.
Yeah, and the work that must go into maintaining, you know, I lived close to Tower Grove Park, and I would just be marveling at how neat it was. I'm talking about the plants and the mulch and the trees, and everything is so well cared for. Mm-hmm. There has to be hours and hours and hours that goes into that.
Yeah, and they've got some really knowledgeable staff and people who are kind of the, you know, the backbone of that operation. But without volunteers, they couldn't get a lot of their work done.
Yeah, and also the Friends of Tower Grove Park, they have a lot of great people on that board and that do a lot of work fundraising. They've got a thing like martinis at the mansions over there. That you, mm-hmm. you buy, you know, a dinner ticket for a couple $100 and you have a couple martinis and some hors d'oeuvres and
yeah.
get the party in a mansion. So yeah, that's a great fundraiser for that group, the Friends of Tower Grove Park. And if you want to join, you just go to that website and sign up.
Mm-hmm. I would think that your experience going to, say, the Botanical Garden, as you know, the knowledge that you have, it's got to be different than if I go to the Botanical Garden. I mean, what is it like for you to walk through the Botanical Garden knowing all you know about plants and trees and flowers?
It's just like taking a walk with a bunch of friends. You see, you see all these plants that you've adored and watched grow over the years, and just get to say, oh yeah, there's my buddy, you know, Rose of Sharon, or there's my buddy, you know, Bald Cypress, or whatever. It's kind of fun to know what you're looking at, and becoming one of those skilled volunteers helps. There's a different group of volunteers out there too called Master Naturalists. These are not naturists. Those are the people who walk around naked. Naturalists.
Thank you for that distinction.
Yeah. Master Naturalists are a neat group who focus more on ecology. And so, like, you've got some of these. Forest Park's such an incredible place to visit, and there's some areas there that they've kind of tried to bring back to kind of like native prairie status. And you've got a key group of volunteers like Master Naturalists who've actually helped to plant and maintain those areas that to a lot of people walking by would just look like a bunch of plants or whatever. Not very, but honestly, there's species in there that are responsible for a lot of really cool birds and insects and critters that depend on those native species in order to survive. So Master Naturalists are a really fun group too, and that's another training program that is coordinated through the University of Missouri Extension.
How about that?
And I've got, you know, the Botanical Garden, for me, I came here as a freshman from Truman State, and we went to a symposium here, and it was just fabulous. So I really fell in love with this place when I was a freshman, and that really sort of precipitated my career in botany and in horticulture and plants and everything. So that's a special place for me in my heart. And, you know, just the people that work there from around the, you know, my life here in St. Louis, you know, Chip Tynan, we were talking about him earlier, the answer guy over there knew him. And you know, even one of my students when I was at St. Louis Community College at Merrimack, I saw him the other day at Schnucks. I said, hey, what are you doing now? He's like, oh, I'm still working over at the Japanese Garden.
I was going to say that is my favorite place.
Isn't it? Yeah.
I love the Japanese Garden.
Yeah. So he's having a good time over there now. So
I still want to get over to the island. I keep forgetting it's always on Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
They open the bridge and everyone can go see the island.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting. I'm putting it on my calendar this year.
It's cool. It's very cool.
Well, I don't want to, you know, speak out of turn here, but just so you know, if you go through the Master Gardener program, they do give you a tour around the garden, and they will take you out to at least they used to take you out to the island. Very exclusive tour.
All right, that's good to know. Let's continue with the phone calls on the Garden Hotline. Kyle, you are up next for our experts here.
Morning, Kyle. Guys. Where are you calling from, and what's your favorite garden center?
Oh, gosh, my favorite garden center. Well, I used to like the one down on Hampton Bear, but I think somebody else took it over now.
Yeah, go again. They're coming up again. I bring them up. It's called the Garden Center on on Hampton, right next to where Barry used to be. And it's nice. You should go back there. Really
yeah,
good people.
Okay, I will. What I'm looking for, well, maybe I'll go look for something that you guys recommend. I have in my front yard landscape three crepe myrtles that have just, I hate them. They're not doing well, and I had to replant one last year, and I'm just want to replace them. And it gets a lot of afternoon sun, so probably between 12 and 1 to 6, it gets some pretty substantial sun and shade in the morning. Is there something maybe that flowers, doesn't have to be evergreen, that flowers and, grows maybe a few 4 or 5 feet tall that you could recommend?
Well, how about an azalea?
I was looking at that.
Yeah.
Will they take that much sun?
So is it full or partial?
It's pretty full, but between 1, it's in the afternoon, between 1, I think, and 5 or 6 o'clock, it gets pretty full sun, and it's up against my house, so it's kind of intense sometimes.
And you were looking for an evergreen?
No, I don't necessarily need an evergreen. I'd like something that flowers, though. Doesn't have flower all summer long, but I would like something with some color.
You can get quite a bit of color out of Rosa Sharon. It's an easy plant to grow. Have you ever seen that one?
I have not.
Okay. Roses are also a really awesome summer plant, but a lot of people have gone to replacing roses because of a disease of roses. And so Rosa Sharon is kind of a nice alternative. Grows pretty fast. Doesn't get too tall. You said 5 or 6 feet maximum. Is that
at the most? I mean, even something 3 or 4 feet would be fine.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of different varieties of roses here, and you could try. One resource I'd point you towards is the Plant Finder at the Missouri Botanical Garden. If you type in mbgplantfinder.com, there is this really awesome database where you can literally go in and say the size of plant that you want, the type of plant you're looking for, the time of year it blooms, even the color of bloom, and then just hit search, and it will give you a bunch of results of things that you could grow in whatever area you have. I use it all the time.
Man, I didn't know about that. That's a good resource.
Thank you. I will check that out. Could you spell that Rose of Sharon?
Sharon. Like the woman's name.
Sharon. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Kyle. Thank you.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Thanks for the call. The number is 314-436-7900. We also have an 800 number. Dial the 1-800-925-1120. Nathan Brandt and Steve Millett will continue taking your questions next on the Garden Hotline.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade.
We are back on the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow. Happy to be joined by Steve Millett and Nathan Brandt, who is on the show for the first time, answering your questions. And we do have some new information, a Twitter account. X. I can't say X. All right. Anyway, it's Garden Hotline. So it's at Hotline Garden, at Hotline Garden. If you want to send in any pictures to show us, things you're asking about, you can do that. It's a new X account, at Hotline Garden. Now, our phone number is 314-436-7900, and we're going to continue the calls with Craig. Good morning, Craig.
Hey, good morning. And guys, first of all, thanks very much for your service. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I have removed two trees from the yard. I cut them down, and we had a little bit of a glitch between the lawn service people and the stump grinder. And what happened was the stump grinder was late, the lawn service was early, and we ended up getting the springtime lawn application with pre-emergent put down before the stumps were ground. My plan is to rototill the dirt, put in some extra topsoil, and plant it with seed, and then put some compost over it. But my problem now is the pre-emergent, and I'm getting two stories here. One is that I can't plant the seed until next fall, and the other one is once I rototill, I'm going to break the plane of the pre-emergent, and it's okay to go ahead and do it. I would surely appreciate a professional opinion on that.
Yeah, pre-emergent herbicides work well when not disturbed, but if you're going to be rototilling and then adding a bunch of topsoil or something, I don't think it'd be a big deal to go ahead and seed at that point, especially if at the very end you were to go ahead and just put like another kind of layer of topsoil all over everything and then seed on top of that. I don't think that you'd have too much problem, but you know, that being said, it is pre-emergent herbicide. It does what it's supposed to. And so don't be surprised if your seed germination is a little less than maybe you thought it would be.
And then also, you should consider the stump got ground, right? So there's a bunch of sawdust around there.
Yeah, I sifted most of that.
Okay.
I built a screen sort of sifter, and I put most of the dirt through the screen. If I get any more chips when I rototill, I'll do it again.
Well, that was a very diligent effort. You're amazing.
But that was this year, though. So,
yeah.
So how far does that go down? I'm just worried. I've done this before. I had a stump ground. I put down some soil, topsoil, some peat moss, and I planted a seed. It came up and everything, but then when it surely got dry, those roots were very shallow, and it just there's they don't grind it all the way to the end of the trunk base. So you just have to push the maybe a rod down to see how deep that goes. Because if you hit wood, maybe 4 inches down, your roots will be a little bit limited when it comes to drought.
It's down about 6 to 8 inches, best I can tell.
Okay.
From when I saw him do it. I'm gonna rototill down as far as the small tiller will go, which is maybe 6 to 8 inches.
Okay.
And that's what I was planning. I didn't want to disturb anything in China.
Okay.
While I'm doing it, but I want to disturb the dirt that's left, and these trees had a pretty extensive root system, so there were a couple that the stump grinder followed out to the laterally a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I have kind of a trench a couple places, but he did a pretty good job of getting most of the wood out, and
yeah. Seems like he should.
So
okay.
I just can would it would there be some wisdom in just doing a small patch of it and seeing how it grows rather than, these are two fairly decent sized areas, and I don't want to invest in the grass seed and the starter fertilizer and all that.
When you say decent size, how big is that?
Well, one of them, by the time you square it off a little bit, is probably about 6 feet wide and 8 feet, it's sort of a rectangle, 6 by 8, and the other one is just slightly bigger.
Now, I think it'd be worth giving it a shot. I mean, you're not going to use a whole lot of seed in that area. You'll be fine. I would rototill it, maybe try and put a layer of topsoil on the very top, and then go for it.
Great.
All right, Craig.
I appreciate your wisdom, guidance, and inspiration. Thanks, and have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Art, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, there's a little disagreement on this as far as wound dressing and disease repair. As far as concrete into the trunk of the tree after you have removed the rotten wood and wet wood, you painted it with veterinary and soot tar, and then you go ahead and put a mixture of concrete inside of it. And the other is with respect to when you make cuts and take limbs off.
Hey, Art. Hey, Thanks again for calling. Where are you? Where are you? What city do you live in?
Well, about anywhere, mostly on Hampton out on Telegraph.
Yeah? What's your favorite garden center?
The one out on Hampton, I think.
Okay. All right. So are you you're a scientist. I remember the last one you talked about permaculture and some sort
Correct.
Of liquid fertilizer. Yeah. So
yeah.
I guess your question, what is your question?
Well, the question is, there's disagreement on wound and disease repair.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and trees.
Absolutely.
Trees.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the best thing to do is...
I mean, people used to try and patch up big holes in trees with concrete or paint over a wound where you'd cut a stump with tar. But if you ask a certified arborist these days, they'd say that those things are probably not very helpful. If you got a hole big enough in a tree to fill with concrete, it doesn't really matter what you're going to do. You're going to have a lot of decay in there. It's ultimately probably going to make the tree decay and kind of decline until it's worth removing.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Art. Let's continue with the phone calls. Linda, you're up next. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about planting tomato plants. We get emails from an old world garden farm, and it said that you should plant them about 2/3 into the ground, and it doesn't make a difference if you have the leaves under there. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's actually definitely true. So a tomato can root all the way up its stem. So you could definitely plant them deep, but it's not like you have to either. Sometimes when people grow tomatoes in their house, if it's been kind of a little too shady, they can get really long and stringy. And it's totally fine to just plant the top, plant it so that the top inch or two is above the ground and let the rest grow below, because that stem will actually root out and you'll have more roots. Yep.
So yeah, I was kind of more concerned about planting the leaves underground. But I have a comment, too. I just went to, this past Monday, a lovely volunteer appreciation, because I'm a volunteer at the Botanical Garden evening, and I did sign up for the Japanese tea house, a tour. So my friend and I went to another tour of the President's Garden, which was lovely, and we kind of missed the tram to the Japanese thing. So we went over there. And went across the bridge, which is normally blocked off because that's where we saw the tea house, so to join that tour. And then the guide told us, this bridge is rickety and you shouldn't go over it. So, but we did get to go in it and everything with our shoes up. It is lovely. It was a really special tour, and so was the President's Garden. So, yeah, if you can ever do that, be sure and do it.
I will, and thank you for sharing. We appreciate that,
yeah,
Linda.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I'm going to make plans for that. All right, we're taking your phone calls. We have a full bank of phones, so we want to get to those. Nathan and Steve, we will continue in just a moment on the Garden Hotline.
April, come she will. When streams are
good song. It's one of my favorites. Ooh, Simon and Garfunkel. All right. It's the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow hosting, along with Steve Millett and Nathan Brandt, who are the experts answering your questions this morning. Let's get right back to the phones. It's 314-436-7900. Cindy, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hey, good morning. I wanted to see if you might be able to recommend a type of shrub for an area of my home. I'm looking to put, some small shrubs in a terrace landscape area, and the house faces north, and on this particular corner, the other side faces east. So this would be on the northeast corner of my house, and I was just like a small decorator shrub, and I was wondering what your suggestion might be.
So when you say decorator shrub, what do you want that thing to do? Do you want flowers, or would you like to be green all year, or... What are you looking for?
Actually, I am open. I just need something that maybe will get no taller than maybe 3 or 4 feet. I'm trying to, as the shrub would grow, cover up the foundation.
So this is up next to your house?
Yes.
Hmm. Well, let's see. In a shadier spot, we did talk about azaleas earlier, and it's easy to think of those this time of year because they look so beautiful. They can handle some shade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other ideas?
Well, yews are also a nice semi-shade to shady plant that you could consider. They don't have a lot of flowers, but they are evergreen, and so they will do a good job of covering up the foundation all year.
What's okay. the name of it?
Very good.
Y-E-W. Yeah, Japanese yews.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier, and you know, you mentioned that you can cut that down to the base if it gets too tall. Does it take pretty aggressive pruning?
Yeah, Japanese yews are actually really forgiving when it comes to pruning, and they're really common up around the foundation of people's homes. They get nervous about what to do with them, but if yours are overgrown, just whack away at them, and they'll come right back.
All right, thank you for the phone call. Nathan, earlier you mentioned a website that the Botanical Garden has where you can look up what you're looking for in a plant. And what was that again?
mbgplantfinder.com.
Plant Finder, yes.
Yep, it's a great website.
That really is a great resource. Okay, Dee Dee, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, hi. I have some yews and boxwoods that have lots of new growth. And I just wondered if it's too soon to trim them now.
You can totally do that now, Dee Dee. They're very forgiving. There's honestly, with using boxwoods, probably not a bad time of year to prune them. You could do it anytime.
Okay. And also on the side of my garage, I have orange butterfly weed. And I'd like to plant some more perennials in between them that butterflies love and would bloom all summer till frost. Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, so it sounds like it's kind of a sunny area?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. If you've ever planted coreopsis or purple coneflower, those are two other native species that you could include in a garden like that. Columbine is another one that butterflies like.
Okay.
The echinaceas are the coneflowers. There's so many different colors you can get now, orange and bright red and, you know, purple. So I think I love those. Those are great ones.
Cardinal flower would be another one.
Bright red.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for your help.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Dee Dee. We appreciate it. And you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi there. Good morning. I have a couple questions. One is, where would you suggest getting, if you can't get zoysia, what is it called?
Sod?
Not the sod, but the other, just...
Oh, like sprigs? Or plugs?
Plugs.
Plugs, thank you. Clumps in the ground. I have zoysia grass in my backyard, but there are, unfortunately, some areas not doing so well, and it doesn't look like they're going to come back. That the area is going to come back, and I do have a company that comes in and fertilizes, and they're not helpful too much on it. But I don't want to put. He suggested doing sod and cutting it in pieces, et cetera.
I think you could take it like a tulip bulb cutter, and then use that to cut the zoysia sod in the backyard, and then bring that up front where your bare spots are.
Thank you, Ann, for your question. If we have some more on that, we'll continue after the top of the hour because we got to take a break here. On the Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900. We'll continue with your questions for Steve and Nathan after the top of the hour. Stay tuned.
In restless walks, she'll prowl.
When I was a young'un in my teens, my mouth used to water for lima beans.
We are back on the Garden Hotline on April 20th. You know what today is?
It's 420.
It's not only 420. It is, according to Steve, it is what? Lima Bean Respect Day?
National Lima Bean Respect Day. This day is dedicated to showing respect to the lima bean, which is a nutritious and versatile legume.
So where was the disrespect coming from? From other beans?
I have no idea. Maybe those green beans and those butter beans got together and started talking bad about the lima. I don't know.
So in case you didn't know it is National Lima Bean Respect Day. So put some respect on the lima bean.
Amen, brother.
All right. Our guests today are Nathan Brandt, a horticulture specialist for the University of Missouri Extension for 10 years. He currently works in the financial services industry, but teaches master gardeners, enjoys volunteer gardening on the side, and Steve Millett, a plant and pest doctor in the local area. We do have a new, thanks to Steve, Twitter/X account. It is at Hotline Garden, in case you want to send us a photo or ask a question that way. We do have a hotline number, 314-436-7900, and Tim has been waiting patiently. So, Tim, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, good morning. Excuse me. I'm getting ready to plant some zoysia sod, and where I'm putting it in, it was an old rock raised bed, you know, along my sidewalk. And so my question is there a specific type of compost or fertilizer or whatever that I should put underneath there so it gets a good hold?
You could probably be best served by doing a soil test before you put any new sod or seed down. Have you ever done that before?
No. Well, we've done it up at the farm before.
Okay.
For planting food plots and stuff. But where would be a local? Like, I live in South County area. Where could I take a soil test sample?
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's not someplace super close to you. But if you're willing to drive up to Page, the University of Missouri Extension has an office there, and they take soil samples. It's always a good idea to test your soil before you do anything big in your yard, just so you can find out if there's anything you need fixing, that you need to till into the soil first to make sure that, like, your pH is right or you've got all the nutrients
right.
In balance. Yeah.
All right. Makes sense. Thanks for your help.
Oh, and just one real thing. Nate's got a great YouTube video. If you just Google Nathan Brandt St. Louis, you'll find his YouTube video, and it has steps on how to take a soil sample. It's really informative.
Very good. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling. Let's go back to Ann. She didn't have much time to ask her. She had a follow-up question. Ann, you're back on the Garden Hotline.
All right. Thanks so much. I did not hear the answer to the zoysia plug question. And also, my other question is this. I bring in a lot of plants into my home from the fall, in the fall, and, you know, keep them in a bright window. They've done very well. What's the procedure protocol for now bringing them out? I tried one plant last year, and my patio is shaded maybe for till about 10 a.m. in the morning. And what should I do it mid-May? Should the temperature be about 50 degrees evening, night, and, you know? Those are some of the questions. Should I gradually put it out in the sun, first start with the shade all day, that type of thing? Thanks for your expertise on that.
Thank you.
So, Steve, was...
The zoysia, what I was trying to say, we had short on time. Really quick, you take a tulip bulb cutter, you know, like a little hand tool you use to dig out a hole to plant a tulip bulb in. Take that. You could sharpen the edges up and maybe get it through the zoysia in your yard where it's doing very well. Take that, take those plugs, stack them up like little pieces of pancakes, and then put them, space them up, you know, maybe 2-3 inches apart in the area where you need some of that bare soil to be taken over by zoysia. And then just wait until, you know, water it, wait until it gets warm enough so you can fertilize it, because you don't really want to fertilize it now when it's kind of still dormant. But Nate, you had a customer or someone called in about places to get zoysia?
Yeah, you'll probably be able to start seeing zoysia available in June. And Kevin Brothers, who's in St. Peter's, is one place that you can find zoysia sod. They probably send their sod around to different garden centers and places, so you might be able to find it elsewhere. But look up kevinbrothers.com. My friend Linda Schrader runs Schrader Sod, and they also do fescue sod. So there's a couple really good local suppliers to depend on. As far as the question related to taking plants outside, it looks like maybe Sunday we might have an overnight low of like 37 or something. That's probably a little too low to take plants that are used to the, you know, 60s and 70s in our houses. So I would probably wait a couple of weeks until you see overnight lows in the higher, like, 50s and 60s. That seems like a better time to try and transition things over.
All right. Thank you, Ann, for the call. We appreciate the questions, and we appreciate your expertise, guys, on this stuff. Let's continue. Anita, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning, and thanks again also for the show. I have a few questions. Bought a redbud tree a couple of years ago, planted it in the backyard, and it looks dead. Well, looks like it budded out a little bit this early spring when we had those warm weathers. Now the extended branches are brittle. I can just snap them off way too easily. No leaves have come out yet. So I think it's toast.
Yeah. So I you know, if you're calling in asking about your dead tree, I would imagine I'd go with your gut feeling.
I guess my question is I know a dogwood needs shade from other trees. Does a redbud need shade from other trees?
Yeah, it's an understory tree. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So I need to get some other kind of a tree for my backyard.
Answer.
And it gives, and I don't know if you can give any guidance on that, but we get the rain really comes through and sometimes it floods for the day a bit and then it runs off.
Maybe a bald cypress? What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how big a space you have there. One really cool thing about redbud trees is they tend to sprout back from the roots. And so you might, if you give a little scratching on it, if you scrape the trunk a little bit and it kind of looks brown underneath there, you can probably cut the thing off of the ground. But you might wait and see before you replant to see if anything else comes up from the ground, because redbuds are notorious for sending up new shoots.
Okay, I'll keep an eye on that. Yeah, I've been kind of waiting. It's like, is it going to leaf out or not? Secondly, in the tree area, we had a wonderful ash tree in the front. And we treated it for several years, but needless to say, it got the emerald ash borer. And we cut it down late last summer. And so it was, oh my gosh, probably 10 years old for sure. So how long are we going to have to wait to put a new tree out front? Like a year or two?
You mean like a new ash? Or you just mean kind of a tree?
Any kind of a tree. I mean, because the thought is, you know, the root system of the dead tree is really still alive. And, you know, I've heard in the past you don't want to plant a new tree within the first year. Maybe that's not really true because the other roots are still growing. And if you got any recommend, I mean, we got the ash because it's a great tree. It loses all its leaves in the winter, and it doesn't have a lot of seeds like an oak or a sweet gumball or even the maples.
There are a lot of other nice trees that you could put in there. If you think about what happens in the forest, there's trees emerging around trees all the time. So there's no reason why you couldn't go out and select a tree today, and as long as you're placing it far enough away from the other tree that you're not like right up next to the trunk or like digging into this, you know, area with full of roots, you should be fine to go ahead and replant.
Okay, so like 5 or 10 feet?
Yeah.
Okay. The other one was in the perfect spot to shade the front of the house. And I guess I probably need to do a soil test, as has been mentioned before. I had two azalea plants. I'm looking for things under the overhang by the house. We had some great evergreens forever, and they're long, you know, they died. We took them out, or they were just compromised. I've got a couple of hydrangeas. That's fine. I tried a couple of azaleas. One of them lived. The other one didn't. But the one that lived didn't bloom out either.
It sounds like you've had a lot of turnover with the plants in that area. I would definitely go and get a soil test first and find out maybe what the issue might be. And then using that information, go ahead and select new plants.
That is Nathan Brandt. He is one of our experts today, along with Steve Millett. The Garden Hotline will continue with your phone calls in just a moment. It's 314-436-7900.
Sunshine.
We are back on the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow. Mike Miller sends his best regards, and of course we send our best to him as he continues his recovery. In the meantime, we have Steve Millett, a plant and pest doctor, with us, and Nathan Brandt, new to the show this week. He currently works in the financial services industry and enjoys volunteer gardening, but he has a horticulture background and teaches master gardeners. So when you're teaching the masters, you got a lot of knowledge.
Hey, thank you.
the phone number is 314-436-7900. Melinda has been waiting to ask a question. You're up next. Hello, Melinda. What's your question?
Hi there. We have a miniature lilac tree. We have two of them on the back of our house, and they're like balls, I guess. And one of them has lost a quarter of its leaf, almost like a wave on one side. It just took out all the leaves. I also have a Japanese maple that's kind of near it, and it lost all of its leaves first. And we have a lot of spider mites. Could that have caused it?
When was this happening?
It started, the Japanese maple was last season, and now the lilac is starting to go. And so it looks like something's eating it, but I can't tell, but I'm finding a lot of little red spider mites all over my yard.
The spider mites right now are not really causing an issue. Those are clover grain mites, and there's so those are not a big deal. But and spider mites probably in the summer it's pretty uniform the way that they affect a plant. So it'd be surprising to see half a plant only affected that way. It seems like it could be something else, and I would guess that it's something related to the soil on that side of the plant. But the University of Missouri does have a plant diagnostic lab, and you can always send them pictures and actually samples to have looked at. And so you can get a diagnosis that way.
Okay. And it's Missouri, University of Missouri. What is it?
Yeah. The University of Missouri Plant Diagnostic Lab. It's in Columbia.
Okay.
And you can send them samples from your plant and pictures. You can upload to their website, and they will do diagnostics for you.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. That's another good resource. We're just full of resources this morning.
You know, Nate and I are both plant pathologists by education.
Yeah.
You went to Colorado State?
You know, yeah, Colorado State.
And I went to Wisconsin, so.
Okay.
But Steve's a doctor.
We're geeks. No, well, he's...
Yeah, you definitely are geeks. There's no doubt about it, but that's a good thing. George, you're next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I've got an inkberry plant, a bush that was installed 24 years ago. It's a foundation plant when the house was built. Mm-hmm. And now the foliage is kind of sparse on it. I don't know. I guess it's on a downward slide. But I just wanted to see if you think giving it a hard prune might reinvigorate it a little bit, push out some new growth.
Man, I've never pruned inkberry holly before. How long has it kind of been declining?
Like over the last 3 years, maybe 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that is a tough one. I honestly have never pruned on them before. Is it like dead branches kind of interspersed with some live ones or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's got some of the branches on the tips. They have some foliage on them,
okay. But
like the inner core of it is kind of brown and it's, you know, looking pretty sickly.
Well, you can prune other hollies pretty severely, so you might give it a try. And if it's a gradual decline like that over time, and it's been there for such a long time, it would be surprising if it were something, unless you've done something to the area, like...
No.
Okay. Haven't. Okay.
Yeah, and maybe just do the pruning in the winter when it's dormant, too. That'd probably be
in the winter time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's evergreen, but wintertime now would not be the good time to do it.
Yeah, I mean, earlier might be a little bit better. But, gosh, you know, honestly, I would say take some pictures of that guy and think about doing the same thing we told the previous caller. Send that into University of Missouri and see if they can give you some ideas about what might be going on. Is it just one or is it like a whole row of them?
Yeah, it's just one.
Okay. Well, maybe it's, 24 years old. Maybe it's time for it to get a refresh and maybe put something else in there, too.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. I'll give it a little prune and then see if that helps a little bit. But, you know, I didn't know with evergreens like that, you know, you really don't want to take too much off them. I know that.
Well, there's some evergreens that, like a juniper, if you cut too far back, it'll never grow back.
Right.
But you could try it on part of the plant and see if it puts on new growth below there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, give it a shot. And then I got another question. I got a hardy hibiscus, and there's been a lot of weeds growing around it. So I did pull back some of it, you know, hand pruned a lot of it, got a lot of the weeds out. But I wanted a Roundup, or not a Roundup, but a Weed Be Gone around it. Mm. That'd be safe.
So you're just trying to prevent new weeds from growing in?
Right, exactly.
A pre-emergent herbicide like Preen is a pretty great tool to use around around garden plants, especially big ones like that. So you might consider getting some Preen. You just sprinkle it out, and for several months, it'll keep anything new from popping up in there, unless it's a perennial weed. But all the annual weeds, it'll take care of. It's really helpful.
Okay, but not like a Weed Gone where you're just killing the weeds and not the lawn.
Yeah, I mean, those are, I think of that as more like a spray or whatever. Like, those just kill what's there right then. They'll kill anything that's, but it sounds like you've already gotten rid of everything and you're just trying to keep new stuff from coming in. That's where you need a pre-emergent.
Yeah, I pulled pretty much like maybe 6 inches around it, but then there's still more weeds, you know, and I mulched over it, but there's still more weeds there. And I didn't know how close I could get with a Weed Gone spray.
Yeah.
And not affect the shrub.
You might just, like, honestly, it sounds weird, but just put a barrier between the area you're spraying and the plant. Use like a big piece of cardboard and then just do your spray at the same, and then let it dry and you'll be fine.
All right, George, we appreciate the call. Our experts are Nathan and Steve this morning on the Garden Hotline. And Sandy, you're up next. Good morning. Sandy.
Good morning. A couple of years ago, I planted about 200 daffodil bulbs, and they came up beautifully the first year, which was last March, and not a one came up this year. Okay. Not one. Any clue? Do you think I planted the bulbs down too deep? Or it's
waterlogged down there, you know, if you did it too deep. And you got to make sure when you buy them, you get the naturalizer tulips, because there's some tulips that you get that just pop in.
Daffodils.
I'm sorry, did I say marigolds?
You said tulips.
I said tulips, yeah, okay. Daffodils. Daffodils, if you get that, you need to get the natural daffodils, the naturalizers.
Well, but the first year they came up beautifully.
Okay.
So you don't have any foliage at all this year?
Oh, foliage, yes. I have foliage, but no yellow blossom.
Okay,
yes.
Give it some time. Daffodils in their first year are kind of, you know, they've come from a farm and they're really, but I've seen in my own yard too where it takes them maybe a few years to kind of get used to the area, and then you'll might see some new blooms. But give them a couple years. Don't give up on them.
And fertilize too.
Okay, But again, last year they were beautiful. My neighbors were like, "Oh my goodness, this is like the botanical garden."
I had the same experience in my yard.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And then patient.
How can I fertilize them now? When do I do that?
Yeah, now is a great time when the foliage is up. I would consider just going to get an all-purpose like liquid fertilizer and use it a couple of times during the growing season.
Yeah, you don't want it. You stay away from the slow release because you want it right now. So get something like Miracle-Gro or something like that.
Miracle-Gro.
Jax.
Yeah.
Okay. And then lastly, I do have Miracle-Gro that's about 3 years old, the granules that I mix with water. Do you think it loses its potency drastically over 3 years,
As long as it's, you know, if it's black, it's sort of oxidized, but yeah, it should be good for a long time. It may be hard. You may have to chip at it, but yeah, it's still good.
Okay. Thank you so much. Well, what about the bone meal? I used bone meal, I think, in the soil when I planted them.
That's slow release. They'll take a while. So you got to give it time. So get something fast like the Jax or the Miracle-Gro, and you got it.
Will do.
Have fun.
Thanks. We appreciate the call this morning on the Garden Hotline, which is 314-436-7900. We also have a 1-800-925-1120 number. We'll take more of your questions for Nathan and Steve coming up next. Stay tuned. Back on the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow. Glad to be with you. Our experts today are Steve Millett and Nathan Brand, taking your questions about plants and trees and flowers and gardens. And we have Sharon up next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning. I have a question about soil for containers. Is it best to use like a Miracle-Gro soil or a mix?
It depends on what container you want to use and where you want to put it. And
like
how much.
Pot.
Okay. Big pot, little pot, and you want it. Is it on a patio? Is it in the shade and stuff like that? Because
no, it's sun.
Okay. You can use the regular packaged material, which is mainly sphagnum peat moss, perlite, and some vermiculite with some a little bit of starter nutrient solution in there. That's just easy to do. And then you can replace that, you know, every year, every other year. But you don't want to use like native soil.
Right.
Some people do that with like tomato raised bed gardens, and they mix it with compost and some peat. So they sort of engineer their own soil. So you can do that as well, but I wouldn't use just straight soil.
So. Yeah.
So like a Miracle-Gro potting mix would be okay?
Yeah, you can get them on sale, you know, at hardware stores or your independent garden centers. I think we should push them because they have a lot of that. And while you're there, get a bunch of plants to put in there.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call, Sharon. Sandy, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. Yes. I got a question regarding crepe myrtles. I have a crepe myrtle that, it's about 15 years old and it has been a bush. And what I've done is I've trimmed it back. So just the main stalks are going. But now I have all these, I guess they're runners or something. They're coming out of the bottom, probably about 3 feet around the base of it. And they're just starting to sprout now. I was wondering if I could just put some, you know, Kilzol or something on there just to kill that growth or how I should take care of it because it's in a rock garden.
So are they coming out like right next to the base or are they kind of spreading out and coming out from, you know, like
they're
away
spreading.
From it?
They're spreading out and coming up like away from it.
Wow. Okay. We've like crab apple trees, for example, do the same thing. They're sending their sprouts all the time. And you can, as long as, you know, read the label, but you can, there are herbicides that can be used to kind of slow down sprouts and things like that. But I would definitely be careful in reading the label to make sure that your plant is listed. Otherwise, I mean, you're going to have to, you know, dig them out or something like that. But Roundup used to be the thing that people use for that. And it could be pretty effective. But I would definitely read the label just to make sure.
Okay. Does it have anything to do with since, you know, it used to be just like basically a free-for-all, almost a bush. I mean, it would be 3 feet in diameter and get to be about 10 feet tall.
Yeah,
and
it does.
So by me cutting it back just to the main stalks,
it promoted new growth.
It underground. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.
Thank you. We appreciate the question. John, you're next.
Are you sure you're on your game today? Mom told me it was a slice.
John, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, sorry. Actually, okay. I was just asking about a poison ivy that's taken over a mulch bed that we've got in the back and what you guys find the most effective way to get rid of it.
Make sure it's not like, what's the other one? It's like box elder. It has the three leaves.
Yeah.
Don't confuse it with box elder. And if you're messing with poison ivy, always wear gloves, long sleeve shirt, and don't wear shorts. And don't rub your face with it.
A non-selective herbicide would be a good thing for something like that. And there's plenty of those to choose from at basically any garden center. If there are things in that same area that you don't want to kill, be really careful about how you apply it. But yeah, you can probably get a ready-to-use herbicide just to kind of spot spray in there.
Yeah, and actually if you go to like some of the bigger hardware stores that have a greater selection of herbicides, you can actually get a poison ivy product that has a great recipe for using it to kill poison ivy.
Yep.
Especially the thick, viney ones.
Okay.
There you go.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Be careful.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Yeah, be careful if you guys have poison ivy. I'm assuming you are gardeners. Had it before.
It leaves of three, let it be. Yeah.
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 And if it's got that, the third longer stem, red stems, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. The birds eat poison ivy berries and they spread them all over the place. So
I hated having poison ivy. That's awful. I had to end up going to the doctor on that one.
Oh, no.
Get a cortisone shot or whatever they,
ouch.
What do they do? Yeah. It was bad. Anyway, Anita, you have a question on the garden hotline?
I'm touching back when you were talking, you guys cut out. My phone didn't hang up, but I couldn't hear. My house faces east and west, and I'm looking for plants to plant next against the house. I tried azaleas. One of them died, one of them didn't. Maybe I need to do something to the soil, like acid or whatever the opposite of acid is. I can't think of it.
Alkaline.
Alkaline, thank you. Yes, or just, I would prefer something flowering rather than just evergreen. And it, of course, the overhang cuts down on the amount of rain, so I'd have to make sure and water it more often. But any suggestions?
Well, since you have had some difficulty getting things to grow in there, I would, like I've mentioned before, just do a soil test really quick first to see what's going on in that area. A soil test will almost guide you to what you should plant, depending on the pH and the quality of that soil. And then from there, you said the east or west side of your house, there's so many different options. I would consider giving the plant finder, mbgplantfinder.com, a try. Just go in there.
I went out there and
good.
Ask some very specific questions. So it's kind of like if you don't know what you want, you...
You could literally put in the height and a flowering shrub, and it would give you, you know, some opportunities. Sometimes you need to narrow it down so there's not too many.
Yeah, not too many options.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. I lost my nursery, which was bears, and we used them religiously.
And there's a lot of other great nurseries, too.
There are. I'm going to have to Google. I know of like one or two, but yeah, there's a lot out there. All right. I will do that. Thank you.
Thanks, Anita. We appreciate it. And Plant Finder is a great resource, it sounds like.
I use it all the time.
Yeah, I would imagine. We are going to take a quick break and then come back with your questions at 314-436-7900 for Steve Millett and Nathan Brandt on the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. We're back on the Garden Hotline. I'm Johnny Cashin. No, I'm Scott Jagow, actually. Along with Steve Millett and Nathan Brandt, they are taking your questions today. We've had a great show so far. Let's keep it going. Up next, we have Carol on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning, Carol.
Hi. Good morning. What's the best way to trim a boxwood hedge?
With the pruners?
I've researched it a little bit online, and one guy says just take your clippers to it. Another one says use hand pruners and go in and individually do it. Well, that's a lot of pruning.
Agreed. I would definitely use like a hedge trimmer or a big pair of clippers, and then you could go in and remove a few.
Hey guys, it's Daxton.
And Hayden from Blondies Out Loud.
And if you've ever thought about starting a podcast or making money from one,
we use Creator Lab from Odyssey for our show, and it's honestly been so easy.
It's free hosting, and it gives you a really simple way to earn on top of whatever you're already doing.
Which, of course, we love because it just adds another stream without the extra work.
So, if you're a creator or podcast curious,
check it out at creators.odyssey.com.
Cool thing about redbud trees is they tend to sprout back from the roots, and so you might, if you give a little scratching on it, if you scrape the trunk a little bit and it kind of looks brown underneath there, you can probably cut the thing off of the ground. But you might wait and see before you replant to see if anything else comes up from the ground, because redbuds are notorious for sending up new shoots.
Okay, I'll keep an eye on that. Yeah, I've been kind of waiting. It's like, is it going to leaf out or not? Secondly, in the tree area, we had a wonderful ash tree in the front, and we treated it for several years, but needless to say, it got the emerald ash borer, and we cut it down late last summer, and it was, oh my gosh, probably 10 years old for sure. So how long are we going to have to wait to put a new tree out front, like a year or two?
You mean like a new ash, or you just mean like any kind of a tree?
Any kind of a tree. I mean, because the thought is, you know, the root system of the dead tree is really still alive. And, you know, I've heard in the past you don't want to plant a new tree within the first year. Maybe that's not really true because the other roots are still growing. And if you got any recommendations, I mean, we got the ash because it's a great tree. It loses all its leaves in the winter, and it doesn't have a lot of seeds like an oak or a sweet gumball, or even the maples.
There are a lot of other nice trees that you could put in there. If you think about what happens in the forest, there's trees emerging around trees all the time. So there's no reason why you couldn't go out and select a tree today, and as long as you're placing it far enough away from the other tree that you're not like right up next to the trunk or like digging into this, you know, area with full of roots, you should be fine to go ahead and replant.
Okay, so like 5 or 10 feet?
Yeah.
Okay. The other one was in the perfect spot to shade the front of the house. And I guess I probably need to do a soil test, as has been mentioned before. I had two azalea plants. I'm looking for things under the overhang by the house. We had some great evergreens forever, and they're long, you know, they died. We took them out, or they were just compromised. Got a couple of hydrangeas. That's fine. I tried a couple of azaleas. One of them lived. The other one didn't. But the one that lived didn't bloom out either.
It sounds like you've had a lot of turnover with the plants in that area. I would definitely go and get a soil test first and find out maybe what the issue might be. And then using that information, go ahead and select new plants.
That is Nathan Brandt. He is one of our experts today, along with Steve Millett. The Garden Hotline will continue with your phone calls in just a moment. It's 314-436-7900.
My life, my life, my life, my life. Sunshine.
We are back on the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow. Mike Miller sends his best regards, and of course we send our best to him as he continues his recovery. In the meantime, we have Steve Millett, a plant and pest doctor, with us, and Nathan Brandt, new to the show this week. He currently works in the financial services industry and enjoys volunteer gardening, but he has a horticulture background and teaches master gardeners. So when you're teaching the masters, you got a lot of knowledge.
Hey, thank you.
the phone number is 314-436-7900. Melinda has been waiting to ask a question. You're up next. Hello, Melinda. What's your question?
Hi there. We have a miniature lilac tree. We have two of them on the back of our house. And they're like balls, I guess. And one of them has lost a quarter of its leaf, almost like a wave on one side. It just took out all the leaves. I also have a Japanese maple that's kind
kind of near it, and it lost all of its leaves first. And we have a lot of spider mites. Could that have caused it?
When was this happening?
It started, the Japanese maple was last season, and now the lilac is starting to go. And so it looks like something's eating it, but I can't tell, but I'm finding a lot of little red spider mites all over my yard.
The spider mites right now are not really causing an issue. Those are clover grain mites, and so those are not a big deal. But and spider mites probably in the summer it's pretty uniform the way that they affect a plant. So it'd be surprising to see half a plant only affected that way. It seems like it could be something else, and I would guess that it's something related to the soil on that side of the plant. But the University of Missouri does have a plant diagnostic lab, and you can always send them pictures and actually samples to have looked at. And so you can get a diagnosis that way.
Okay. And it's Missouri, University of Missouri. What is it?
Yeah. The University of Missouri Plant Diagnostic Lab. It's in Columbia.
Okay.
And you can send them samples from your plant and pictures. You can upload to their website, and they will do diagnostics for you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. That's another good resource. We're just full of resources this morning.
You know, Nate and I are both plant pathologists by education.
Yeah.
You went to Colorado State?
Yep, Colorado State.
And I went to Wisconsin, so.
Okay.
But Steve's a doctor.
We're geeks. No, well, he's...
Yeah, you definitely are geeks. There's no doubt about it, but that's a good thing. George, you're next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I've got an inkberry plant, a bush that was installed 24 years ago. It's a foundation plant when the house was built. Mm-hmm. And now the foliage is kind of sparse on it. I don't know. I guess it's on a downward slide. But I just wanted to see if you think giving it a hard prune might reinvigorate it a little bit, push out some new growth.
Man, I've never pruned inkberry holly before. How long has it kind of been declining?
Like over the last 3 years, maybe 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that is a tough one. I honestly have never pruned on them before. Is it like dead branches kind of interspersed with some live ones or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's got some of the branches on the tips, they have some foliage on them, but like the inner core of it is kind of brown and it's, you know, looking pretty sickly.
Well, you can prune other hollies pretty severely, so you might give it a try. And if it's a gradual decline like that over time, and it's been there for such a long time, it would be surprising if it were something, unless you've done something to the area, like...
No.
Yeah, and maybe just spot. Do the pruning in the winter when it's dormant, too. That'd probably be
in the winter time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's evergreen, but wintertime now would not be the good time to do it.
Yeah, I mean, earlier might be a little bit better. But, gosh, you know, honestly, I would say take some pictures of that guy and think about doing the same thing we told the previous caller. Send that into University of Missouri and see if they can give you some ideas about what might be going on. Is it just one or is it like a whole row of them?
Yeah, it's just one.
Okay. Well, maybe it's, 24 years old. Maybe it's time for it to get a refresh and maybe put something else in there, too.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. I'll give it a little prune and then see if that helps a little bit. But, you know, I didn't know with evergreens like that, you know, you really don't want to take too much off them. I know that.
Well, there's some evergreens that, like a juniper, if you cut too far back, it'll never grow back.
Right.
But you could try it on part of the plant and see if it puts on new growth below there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, give it a shot. And then I got another question. I got a hardy hibiscus, and there's been a lot of weeds growing around it. So I did pull back some of it, you know, hand pruned a lot of it, got a lot of the weeds out. But I wanted a Roundup, or not a Roundup, but a Weed Be Gone around it. Mm. That'd be safe.
So you're just trying to prevent new weeds from growing in?
Right, exactly.
A pre-emergent herbicide like Preen is a pretty great tool to use around around garden plants, especially big ones like that. So you might consider getting some preen. You just sprinkle it out, and for several months, it'll keep anything new from popping up in there, unless it's a perennial weed. But all the annual weeds, it'll take care of. It's really helpful.
Okay, but not a, like a weed gone where you're just killing the weeds and not the lawn. That
like a yeah, I mean, those are, I think of that as more like a spray or whatever. Like those just kill what's there right then. They'll kill anything that's, but it sounds like you've already gotten rid of everything and you're just trying to keep new stuff from coming in. That's where you need a pre-emergent.
Yeah, I pulled pretty much like maybe 6 inches around it, but then there's still more weeds, you know, and I mulched over it, but there's still more weeds there. And I didn't know how close I could get with a weed gone spray.
Yeah,
and not affect the shrub.
You might just like, honestly, it sounds weird, but just put a barrier between the area you're spraying and the plant. Use like a big piece of cardboard and then just do your spray at the same, and then let it dry and you'll be fine.
All right, George, we appreciate the call. Our experts are Nathan and Steve this morning on the Garden Hotline. And Sandy, you're up next. Good morning. Sandy?
Good morning. A couple of years ago, I planted about 200 daffodil bulbs, and they came up beautifully the first year, which was last March, and not a one came up this year. Okay. Not one. Any clue? Do you think I planted the bulbs down too deep, or
that could be waterlogged down there? You know, if you did it too deep, and you got to make sure when you buy them, you get the naturalizer tulips, because there's some tulips that you get that just pop and that's
daffodils. Daffodils.
I'm sorry. Did I say marigolds?
You said tulips.
I said tulips. Yeah, okay. daffodils. Daffodils. If you get that, you need to get the natural daffodils, the naturalizers.
Well, but the first year they came up beautifully.
Okay.
So you don't have any foliage at all this year?
Oh, foliage, yes. I have foliage, but no yellow blossom.
Okay,
no.
Give it some time. Daffodils in their first year are kind of, you know, they've come from a farm and they're really, but I've seen in my own yard too where it takes them maybe a few years to kind of get used to the area, and then you'll might see some new blooms. But give them a couple years. Don't give up on them.
And fertilize too.
Okay, but again, last year they were beautiful. My neighbors were like, oh my goodness, this is like the botanical garden.
I had the same experience in my yard.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And then patient.
How can I fertilize them now? When do I do that?
Yeah, now's a great time when the foliage is up. I would consider just going to get an all-purpose like liquid fertilizer and use it a couple of times during the growing season.
Yeah, you don't want it. You stay away from the slow release because you want it right now. So get something like a Miracle-Gro or something like that.
Miracle-Gro.
Jax.
Yeah.
Okay. And then lastly, I do have Miracle-Gro that's about 3 years old, the granules that, you know, that I mix with water. Do you think it loses its potency drastically over 3 years, or
as long as it's, you know, if it's black, it's sort of oxidized, but yeah, it should be good for a long time. It may be hard, you may have to chip at it, but yeah, it's still good.
Okay, thank you so much. Well, what about the bone meal? I used bone meal, I think, in the soil when I planted them.
That's slow release, they'll take a while, so you got to give it time. So get something fast like the Jax or the Miracle-Gro, and you got it.
Will do.
Have fun.
Thanks. We appreciate the call this morning on the Garden Hotline, which is 314-436-7900. We also have a 1-800-925-1120 number. We'll take more of your questions for Nathan and Steve coming up next. Stay tuned. Back on the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow. Glad to be with you. Our experts today are Steve Millett and Nathan Brand, taking your questions about plants and trees and flowers and gardens. And we have Sharon up next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning. I have a question about soil for containers. Is it best to use
like a Miracle-Gro soil or a mix?
It depends on what container you want to use and where you want to put it. And
like
how
in
much?
Pots?
Okay. Big pot, little pot, and you want it, is it on a patio, is it in the shade and stuff like that? Because
no, it's sun.
Okay. You can use the regular packaged material, which is mainly sphagnum peat moss, perlite, and some vermiculite with some little bit of starter nutrient solution in there. That's just easy to do. And then you can replace that, you know, every year, every other year. But you don't want to use like native soil.
Right.
I know some people do that with like tomato raised bed gardens, and they mix it with compost and some peat. So they sort of engineer their own soil. So you could do that as well, but I wouldn't use just straight soil.
So. Yeah.
So like a Miracle-Gro potting mix would be okay?
Yeah, you can get them on sale, you know, at you know, hardware stores or your independent garden centers. I think we should push them because they have a lot of that. And while you're there, get a bunch of plants to put in there.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call, Sharon. Sandy, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. Yes. I got a question regarding crepe myrtles. I have a crepe myrtle that, it's about 15 years old and it has been a bush. And what I've done is I've trimmed it back. So just the main stalks are going. But now I have all these, I guess they're runners or something. They're coming out of the bottom, probably about 3 feet around the base of it, and they're just starting to sprout now. I was wondering if I could just put some, you know, Kilzol or something on there just to kill that growth, or how I should take care of it, because it's in a rock garden.
So are they coming out like right next to the base, or are they kind of spreading out and coming out from, you know, like
they're
away
spreading,
from it?
They're spreading out and coming up like away from it.
Wow. Okay. We've like crab apple trees, for example, do the same thing. They're sending their sprouts all the time. And you can, as long as, you know, read the label, but you can, there are herbicides that can be used to kind of slow down sprouts and things like that. But I would definitely be careful in reading the label to make sure that your plant is listed. Otherwise, I mean, you're going to have to, you know, dig them out or something like that. Roundup used to be the thing that people use for that, and it could be pretty effective. But I would definitely read the label just to make sure.
Okay, does it have anything to do with, since, you know, it used to be just like a basically a free for all, almost a bush. I mean, it would be 3 feet in diameter and get to be about 10 feet tall.
Yeah,
and,
it does. You
know, so by me cutting it back just to the main stalks.
It promoted new growth.
It underground. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.
Thank you. We appreciate the question. John, you're next.
Are you sure you're on your game today? Mom told me it was a slice.
John, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, sorry. Actually, okay. I was just asking about a poison ivy that's taken over a mulch bed that we've got in the back and what you guys find the most effective way to get rid of it.
Make sure it's not like, what's the other one? It's like box elder. It has the three leaves.
Yeah.
Don't confuse it with box elder. And if you're messing with poison ivy, always wear gloves, long sleeve shirt, and don't wear shorts. And don't rub your face with it.
Yeah. A non-selective herbicide would be a good thing for something like that. And there's plenty of those to choose from at basically any garden center. If there are things in that same area that you don't want to kill, be really careful about how you apply it. But you can probably get a ready-to-use herbicide just to kind of spot spray in there.
Yeah, and actually if you go to like some of the bigger hardware stores that have a greater selection of herbicides, you can actually get a poison ivy product that has a great recipe for using it to kill poison ivy.
Yep.
Especially the thick, viney ones.
Okay.
There you go.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Be careful.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Yeah, be careful. If you guys have poison ivy, I'm assuming you are gardeners. You have had it before.
It leaves of three, let it be. Yeah.
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 And if it's got that, the third longer stem, red stems, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. The birds eat poison ivy berries, and they spread them all over the place. So.
I hated having poison ivy. That's awful. Had to end up going to the doctor on that one.
Oh, no.
Get a cortisone shot or whatever they...
Ouch.
What do they do? Yeah, it was bad. Anyway, Anita, you have a question on the garden hotline?
Yeah, I'm touching back when you were talking, you guys cut out. My phone didn't hang up, but I couldn't hear. My house faces east and west, and I'm looking for plants to plant next against the house. I tried azaleas. One of them died. One of them didn't. Maybe I need to do something to the soil, like acid or whatever the opposite of acid is. I can't think of it.
Alkaline.
Alkaline. Thank you. Yes. I would prefer something flowering rather than just evergreen. And it, of course, the overhang cuts down on the amount of rain. So I'd have to make sure and water it more often. But any suggestions?
Well, since you have had some difficulty getting things to grow in there, I would, like I've mentioned before, just do a soil test really quick first to see what's going on in that area. A soil test will almost guide you to what you should plant, depending on the pH and the quality of that soil. And then from there, you said the east or west side of your house, there's so many different options. I would consider giving the plant finder, mbgplantfinder.com, a try. Just go in there.
I went out there and asked some very specific questions. So it's kind of like if you don't know what you want, you...
You could literally put in the height and a flowering shrub, and it would give you, you know, some opportunities. Sometimes you need to narrow it down so there's not too many.
Yeah, not too many options.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I lost my nursery, which was bears, and we use them religiously.
And there's a lot of other great nurseries too.
There are. I'm gonna have to Google the. I know of like one or two, but yeah. There's a lot out there. All right. I will do that. Thank you.
Thanks, Anita. We appreciate it. And Plant Finder is a great resource, it sounds like.
I use it all the time.
Yeah, I would imagine. We are going to take a quick break and then come back with your questions at 314-436-7900 for Steve Millett and Nathan Brandt on the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Hotline. I'm Johnny Cashin. No, I'm Scott Jagow, actually. Along with Steve Millett and Nathan Brandt, they are taking your questions today. We've had a great show so far. Let's keep it going. Up next, we have Carol on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning, Carol.
Hi. Good morning. What's the best way to trim a boxwood hedge?
With the pruners?
I've researched it a little bit online, and one guy says just take your clippers to it. Another one says use hand pruners and go in and individually do it. Well, that's a lot of pruning.
Agreed. I would definitely use like a hedge trimmer or a big pair of clippers, and then you could go in and remove a few branches to create some open space in the middle of the plant like that. So all the growth isn't on the outer edge, but you don't want to hand prune boxwood. That's too much work.
That sounds like cramping.
Yes.
Okay, so just take the electric clippers and go at it gently?
Yeah. They respond really well to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's the perfect size. I don't want to get any bigger.
There's not very many shrubs that I would say that about. A boxwood is definitely one that you can just use hedge trimmers with.
Okay, thanks so much.
Yeah, good question. Thank you, Carol.
Yeah, we had a guy last week that remember he wanted to do use hedge clippers on a Colorado blue spruce.
Mm-hmm. I guess maybe that's a gardening joke.
No, it's because it's sappy. It would like stick it up like the first 30 seconds.
All right, Tom, you're up next.
Little George.
Hello.
Hello, Tom.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes,
all right. If you don't mind, I do have two questions about herbicides. One, I have a handful of red twig dogwoods that I would like to use Roundup at the base of those bushes. They're about 3 feet tall, a few years old. If I use Roundup at the base of those bushes to eliminate grasses and weeds, if I don't get it on the foliage of the dogwoods, will I harm the dogwoods?
That's a tough one.
I'd use like a burning one, like some of the salts, herbicidal salts, and even a commercial vinegar That will kill some of the leaves. That'll stunt it. It's not going to kill it. It won't be absorbed in systemically. So it'll just like burn the foliage. If that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. It's safer around something that's got a little bit more, you know, bark to it or something. I'd be nervous about applying Roundup to anything that's still got kind of very thin bark or green stems.
Okay. And then if I can ask quickly, this time of year in controlling wild violets in turf grass, is now a good time? And any recommendations on products?
Go ahead.
I'd say best time is actually in the fall.
Okay.
With those perennial weeds, you're better served to put an herbicide on them when they're taking their nutrients kind of back down to the roots. This time of year, you can kind of burn it off. And there are herbicides that are specifically, you'll see wild violet right on the label, but you'll have a much, much better effectiveness using that in the fall.
Okay, but if I use it now, it just won't be as effective, but I can give it a shot?
Yeah, it'll kind of slow them down a little bit.
Okay, that'd be fine. All right, well, great. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the question this morning. We're rolling right through them. We're going to Ken next. Hi, Ken.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I have a 3-acre yard, and I'm getting inundated with wild garlic and wild onion.
Yeah, fall would be a good time to get that again with the herbicides.
Yeah, look for ones that are specifically formulated for those plants because it's not a broadleaf. And so you're going to need something that will treat a monocot.
Yeah, and something that has a surfactant in it because they have those waxy leaves and they're vertical. So it's hard to get on them.
Does Bonide or Scott's have anything in that family of products?
I'm sure, you know, Spectracide's probably got some. You look for it on a label, you know, go to the hardware store or your local garden center and ask for something that would control the wild onion.
3 acres is a lot of spraying, my friend.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. And, you know, those things will be gone
if your
here.
Boys are volunteering to help, I'll be glad to let you.
Get some sheep.
There you go.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Ken. Up next on the Garden Hotline, Brent. Good morning. What's your question?
Hey, guys. I got about 6 asparagus plants. 5 of them are healthy, giving me some nice stems, half-inch diameter. One of them is about a quarter-inch diameter. When and how do I fertilize asparagus?
Fertilize asparagus when it's actively growing. Though I will say, asparagus is one of those vegetables as a perennial that can kind of get by from year to year without a ton of fertilizer. And so if you were going to do anything, I'd do it early in the spring when the foliage is first, you know, is coming up and getting tall. Maybe wait till after you've picked. But you could use just like a liquid fertilizer on that. But it's not something I think you'd have to do very often because it doesn't require a lot of fertilizer.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Brent, for the call. Mel, you're on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Good morning. I have 2 boxwood questions. One is the Green Mountain, and it's got 2 or 3 small branches near the top. It's kind of a tan color and dry. Do I cut it out, or do I treat it with something?
No, just go ahead and cut it out.
I bought the whole plant, a small green velvet one, last year because I cut things out, and it didn't work. The whole plant died.
Yeah, boxwoods do sometimes lose a branch here or there. It's okay to go in and just cut those brown ones out.
Go in and just cut those brown ones out.
Yep.
What is it called from? Do you have any idea?
Say again?
It could be
ice damage.
That
it caused by?
Yeah, some winter damage could cause that. There's a fungal disease that has also been an issue lately, but just cut out those brown branches and it should come back.
Okay, and then I have about 10 green velvet, the smaller plants, and they're like not quite 3 years old. One of them is not as vibrant as the other. The color is pale. What is going on?
Good question. There are a bunch of different things that could go wrong with a boxwood. If it's one in the middle of a bunch, I'd suggest taking a soil sample right there and see if there's anything off.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And that is going to have to wrap up the show today.
Scott's been great. And Nate, you did a great job.
Hey, thanks.
You did. And fun I to be thank here. Both of you for being here.
He's
and,
an ace.
And giving your expertise and answering people's questions patiently. And thank you for calling in. Again, we send our best regards to Mike Miller, and he is sending his best to you as a listener. And as soon as we have an update on his recovery, I will let you know. That is going to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
Because you're mine, I walk the line.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.